Today's episode is brought to you by Slay House Publishing, recorded at Wayne Howard Studios.
Hi, everybody. This is Jeremy. This is Slay House Publishing presents Lit Bits, and we are here with a very special episode. Joining me always is Trevor. Say hello.
I'm here. Hello.
And Curtis, who is not at the computer, but he's here.
He'll be here.
And joining us today is a very special guest. We're welcome. We'd love to welcome S.A. Barnes. Stacy, hi. You're the author of Dead Silence and some other. That's the most recent novel that's come out. That's the right. It's still in hardcover.
Yes.
That's and yes. So you're. We're just very fortunate to have you on today. I mean, that's the novel I think we're focusing on, but I know we're getting to like the other stuff you've written and kind of all that. But we're really, I think I'm stumbling through this introduction.
I was gonna say I had pulled her bio from the website and I could just read that.
I mean, yeah, that would probably work if I'd learned to read the script. But hi, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I am, above all, an informal person, so that works for me.
Awesome. So let's just kind of jump into things a little bit. Let's talk first just about kind of your publishing career, because I know that you've worked in a lot of different genres, and Dead Silence, you know, while that's definitely the book we know you for, that's not the only book that you've written. You've written in, some YA genres, you've written mysteries, you've written some fantasy, right?
Yeah. Yes. So one of my writer friends, we had this conversation a long time ago at a convention. I doubt she even remembers it. But she said her theory was that you are either kind of a James Cameron or you're a George Lucas. In other words, if you're a George Lucas, you're going to focus basically on one idea and then keep expanding it. If you are James Cameron, you're going to bounce kind of all over the place in sort of related things. And so I'm more in the James Cameron half of that, because I have a lot of interest. I read really widely, and I think that's part of it. Because then something will hook my attention and I'm like, oh, I really want to write this thing. I wrote as Stacey Cade, I wrote YA for Disney Hyperion. The Ghost and the Goth is the book that, if anybody has heard of my name, which probably not, that would be the thing that they would know me for. I had another series, the Project Paper Doll series with them. And then I wrote some YA contemporary for Simon and Schuster. And I've written adult romance too, which I had a blast doing, because I, like I said, I read sort of everything except westerns, and that's probably just a matter of finding the right western to read. So
you're really I think you're really close to writing westerns with Dead Silence, because there are some western elements in there, I think, in the idea of like this huge like frontier that, you know, kind of fights back against you, right?
I feel like space sci-fi really lends itself to that.
To the stars. I mean, wasn't that what Gene Roddenberry said Star Trek was, basically? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, there probably could be. I just haven't, if I'm doing that, I'm doing it unintentionally, because I haven't read a Western or watched really a Western movie ever. So it is an accident, which is a lucky accident, I guess. So yeah.
Well, I know when I was talking to my partner about you and your work, she was like really into discovering that not only had you written this space horror, but that you had also written, you know, some adult romance, and you had written some other stuff. And I think every time she goes to the bookstore, she's constantly looking now for Stacey Cade. She's like, when are they going to get Stacey Cade books in here? Yeah.
That's so nice. Well, she might be. Some of them, the oldest ones, I mean, The Ghost of God came out in 2010, so it's out of print. I'm going to put it back out as an ebook. So some of those are not easily accessible from a bookstore, but I'm working on getting them back out, because I've got the rights back on a few of them. Mm. So yeah, but I appreciate that sort of, it's weird in publishing, sometimes that diversity of interest can count against you, you know, like people are like, oh, you aren't serious about this, or how am I supposed to take horror from you seriously if you wrote people kissing, you know what I mean? Like, it's a weird, it's a weird vibe, but I'm like, to me, there's little bits of every genre in a story anyway, it just depends on what you emphasize.
Yeah, one of the questions that I kind of had for you was, you know, looking at Dead Silence, which I think is a novel that combines several different genres, you know, it's kind of hard to pin down exactly what Dead Silence is, not because I don't think that there's a cohesive vision for it, but because it borrows from so many different genres. There's science fiction in there, there's horror in there, but there's also some romance in there, you know, there's yep. also some corporate thriller in there, you know.
Yes. Well, so there's this story has a little bit, and I guess I should, maybe before I even get into that, I should like describe it really quick in case there's somebody listening who hasn't read it.
Please.
Dead Silence is science fiction horror or space horror, depending on what you want to call it. And it is about a crew of people who are beacon repair team specialists, and they're out in space working on a communications beacon. It is their last day on the job. They are going to be laid off slash fired, replaced with technology. And as they're working on their last beacon, they pick up a strange distress signal, an outdated distress signal, and they decide to check it out, basically because Claire, who's in charge, doesn't really want to go back to Earth anyway, and it's a good excuse. So they go out to check this out, and they find the Aurora, which has been is a space luxury liner, kind of like the Titanic, but in space. And it's been missing for 20 years. It was assumed destroyed, but here it is looking basically whole, and, you know, there's no sign of life, so they decide to try to claim it as salvage. Which, you know, would give them enough money then to not have to worry about working. But of course, once they go on board to try to claim it as salvage, bad, bad things start happening.
Yeah.
That's my quick, like, summary of it.
I feel like that's a great summary.
Yeah, that's
honestly.
A terrific summary.
Yeah.
So I, you know, the thing is about this, Dead Silence has a little bit of a backstory to it because I had been working as a YA writer for a long time. And I had this idea in the back of my head, but I was working on other things. The market shifted rather dramatically, and suddenly what I wanted to write for YA was not what was selling or being bought. So I was kind of in like a pivoting point and trying to figure out what the heck I was going to do. And I had written the first 80 pages, and I wasn't sure, you know, like basically up to the point where Claire is getting that first sculpture down off of the you know, thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it to my agent at the time. Please read this. I know it's way out in left field compared to what I have done before, but can you please just... So basically, I was writing it because I wanted to write it. Like, I didn't go into it with any agenda of I'm going to sell this to XYZ company or I'm going to sell into this genre. It was just like, I have this story. I really like all these pieces, and I'm just going to see what happens, which is not usually how I do that, because if you're writing... with a contract, you're writing under a certain, you know, there are parameters, right? So she read the pages and got back to me and said, first, you need to finish this. And second, this is, I thought I was writing sci-fi thriller. She's like, this is horror and you need, you know, so finish it. So I was like, okay. So I really did not, the things that are in there because I enjoy them and because I like the pieces as they came together, but it wasn't intentional. Like, I guess I don't, you know what I mean? I just sort of wrote the story I wanted to write and all these things, probably because, again, I like a lot of different genres sort of wished together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I think that it works so well. Maybe it's just me because I'm constantly reading and I read, you know, across a very wide variety of genres, you know, and I think that what works for me about this book is that all of the genre elements marry so well together. You know, it feels like it should be intuitive. Like, of course, space horror works, you know, like because space itself is kind of terrifying.
Right? Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think what confuses me a little bit or maybe astonishes me a little bit about the industry is that there's not more... books like this, you know, like this feels so very singular because I think the industry for a long time has kind of been afraid of some of this genre mashing that you do.
Yeah, it was really interesting when I was pitching ideas for the next book. I have one idea that is, again, sci-fi horror, so not space horror in the sense that it's on a planet, but it's set in the future and definitely sci-fi horror. And then I have one that is just what I call like straight up horror with, you know, demons and possessions and stuff like this. And my agent was at the time was like, well, you know, I think it's good to have both because there's, a, you know, this is before Dead Silence came out. She's like, you know, sci-fi doesn't always sell really well. So they may want to go to more of a more traditional, you know, traditional horror that doesn't involve space, basically. And now it's interesting. I don't know if it's just timing or some, I mean, you know, also I think because we're doing more in space, we're talking more about space with, you know, the James Webb, and with all the Elon Musk, SpaceX, all that stuff going on. But yeah, so it did really, really well. Dead Silence did. And there's been a lot more conversation now about space horror because I think for some reason people are ready to read it or something. Like I tell you, I kind of like stumble into things. That is literally what happens. So I write what I like and then hopefully other people like it and sometimes they don't. So.
Well, I was in, I mean, I love this book. I just totally fell in love with it. I mean, from the first chapter, it had me. And I think that you're right. Like, I think there is a public out there who is hungry for this sort of story. Because when we look at space horror in general, I mean, it almost boils down to, like, there are only a few really well-known space horror stories. You know, there's there's Alien or Aliens, you know. There's like Event Horizon, which I think your book gets compared to Titanic and Event Horizon most often, and I can see why, but I also think like it, part of that is because we don't have a vocabulary for what this book is doing, and why I think this book is so very special, you know, because in spite of us having kind of what should be a rich history of space horror, it's just not commonly presented in media.
It isn't. I mean, actually, it's one of those things. I was looking at my bookshelf yesterday and I was in the mood for basically sci-fi horror. And it is not, you can read it all basically in a couple days. I mean, there's just not a lot of contemporary space horror. In movies, even, I think I would add, I didn't actually know about this one until this book came out, and a friend of mine, Rachel Benson, told me Pandorum is another one I would add to that list if you haven't seen that one. Okay. But there's just not. I mean, and also, really, to be fair, which people have asked me about too, there's a good chunk of this book that's very much like Ghost Ship, the Juliana Margulies movie from 2002. So, I mean, you know, I will fully admit to all of those things as an influence, but I wish there was more, I guess. I really wish there was more. I'm thrilled for the opportunity to be able to write more because basically I'm doing that thing where you write the book that you want to read. Callie Wallace has a couple, and I'm not even sure if they're classified as horror so much as science fiction, but Salvation Day and actually a book called Dead Space versus Dead Silence, which I sometimes trip up because mine was originally titled Dead Space and then changed it because of the video game. David Wellington has The Last Astronaut. And so there are a few, but not like, not many. And I don't know why, because there are plenty of people who are like, ooh, Event Horizon, ooh, Aliens. And it's like,
I don't know why either. I think one of the things that kind of strikes me again when looking at like the comps for your book, it is compared so often, I think, to like Event Horizon and Alien, maybe because I think our vocabulary for for space horror.
I do it all the time.
I'm also a very big fan of that, the video game Dead Space. I think, you know, because our vocabulary is based on these books, you know, it's hard, I think, to try to compare your book, which is very different. What did you do to try to differentiate your story from, you know, some of the vocabulary that we see in like Alien or the tropes that we see in like Event Horizon?
I think you're giving me too much. You're giving me too much credit that I actually sat down and made deliberate choices on this versus entertaining myself. there were a couple things specifically that I did want to do. One of the things that if we do have space horror, and I cannot think of the name of this nor who is in it, but there was one where they like were out somewhere. It was on a ship and there was some kind of like little gooey alien thing and then it got out and whatever. I don't know. It was something not that long ago and I watched it and I was like, you know, it's always scientists in a lot of these movies. It's scientists, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of I'm not interested. This sounds terrible because obviously I love science and scientists, but I'm kind of not interested in that as much. I'm interested in the regular people. I'm interested in a future where, you've got people who are just regular average people who this is their job, and their job is definitely risky, but you know, this is what we do. And those are the people I'm interested in, because I feel like that's somehow more relatable in a way, or relatable to a larger segment of the audience, I guess I should say. So, you know, whenever I am choosing to do this, I'm kind of writing it. I'm always wanting to write from a perspective of someone who is out there just doing their job. They're not looking to make big discoveries. They're not looking to stop an alien invasion. It's just, hey, I got to get, you know, I'm punching the clock from 9 to 5. I got to get this done. Because that is more interesting to me. And I feel like that's probably what I draw on from both Event Horizon, because again, those people are the rescue team. They're not the big fancy scientists. I mean, I can't think of his name right now. I always confuse him. It's not Bill Paxton. It's the guy from Sam Neill. You know, I think he is a scientist, but everybody else is like, you know, hey, we're just here to go in and rescue people. And the same thing with aliens. I mean, you're dealing, I think they're space marines, I want to say. Again, you're not talking about, hi, I'm an astrobiologist who is, you know, here to study this strange life form, which I get, and I think that's, but I feel like that has been done so much, and I'm not as interested in that story. So that I deliberately made a choice, and I love stories that involve found family. So not everybody in this family comes out okay, but it is worse. But I'm always interested in that, and having a group of people who, you know, may or may not get along very well, but trying to pull together to do something. So I definitely took elements from all of those things that we talked about, Event Horizon, Aliens, but I kind of wanted to kind of combine them in a different, you know, percentage or proportion, or, you know, add some new stuff in there too.
Yeah. I think that's really refreshing too. I really like Philip K. Dick, you know, the work of Philip K. Dick. And I think a lot of his work, you know, focuses, oddly enough, on just like the day-to-day labor of his protagonists, you know? And I think what makes him such a successful writer for me is that portrayal, because, you know, like you say, that's very rare to see those kinds of portrayals in media. And I think we as common laborers a lot of the time maybe resonate more with those kinds of protagonists.
Well, because it's just like none of us are walking around going, look, I have the entire internet at my hand. You know what I mean? We're just walking around doing our lives, you know? And I feel like part of the problem with anything that's set slightly futuristically or with science is we're always like, it's like, no, this person is doing what they're doing. You know, they're just living their lives. And, you know, yeah, now they don't have to eat. They can take a pill or whatever it is. But they're not, I don't know. I like the way that I sometimes think of it is, I believe it was either Ron Moore or somebody talking about Battlestar Galactica. And he's like, we are the people that the Enterprise wouldn't stop for. In other words, like, they're all banged up and dirty and things are happening. And the Enterprise, which I love Star Trek, is pristine. You know, it's just sort of that. So I like the idea of, you know, hey, crap breaks, we have to deal with it, this is my job, you know? I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that's very Star Wars, I think.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, you live in this space. It's a living space. Yeah.
Yeah, universe, for sure, 100%. I don't pledge allegiance to either side. I grew up with both of them, so.
Yeah, same here.
Same here, yeah.
So, you know, you've published a lot of books before, and you've been kind of on both sides of the publishing angle. You've self-published some stuff before, and then you've also been contracted, you know, by some pretty big, you know, production companies. So, what would you say, you know, kind of characterizes being on both sides of this fence with regards to your publishing?
Well, to be clear, because I don't want to claim credit for something, most of the self-publishing I've done has been around getting my rights back from a traditionally published book and then putting it out there. The self-publishing world is absolutely fascinating. However, and I have thought about it for sure, because there are certain ideas that, you know, that whole combination of things, people are like, well, it's neither fish nor fowl. It doesn't fit in here. It doesn't fit in there. We can't publish it. And it's like, well, you know, that's one of the cool things about, you know, self-publishing is that you can put it out there and then the readers can decide what it is or isn't, or if they want to read it. But I am not a very fast writer. And to really, really make a difference in self-publishing, you have to be able to produce on a quicker level than I am capable of with working full-time and doing the other things. So most of mine has just been, oh, I have this book, the rights came back, I'm going to put it out there so that, because mainly from a selfish perspective, because I liked the story and I want it to still be out there somewhere. So I, in general, at this moment, prefer working with a company, working with traditional publishing, because I am not great at promotion. I'm not great at thinking outside of the writing box. I like to write stories, and if I could shove them under the door somewhere, like, you know what I mean? If I could just lock myself in my little room, and I would do that. And I think as there's self-publishing offers such cool amounts of control and decisions. And sometimes you think, oh, if I can make decisions, then I think I don't want to make those decisions. I'm not good at making those decisions. I always, whenever they present me with a cover, I'm like, well, what does marketing and sales think? Like, what, you know, or is this going to make the book sell? Because that's what I want more than, you know, oh, I like the color purple, which I do, but I'm not going to, you know. So I like working with a team of experts. I'm very grateful for their expertise because to me, the most important part is getting a story that I love out to people. And certainly self-publishing is a way to do that. But I am, I think, not as business focused as I would need to be to do that on a more regular basis.
Yeah, we certainly understand that as a small publisher, you know, trying to find avenues for advertisement, you know, like really kind of getting your stuff out there is really difficult. I think it helps that there is such a broad community. You know, I think if you find the community you really want to be a part of, there are a lot of very supportive people out there.
It has been really interesting. So because I have written in a lot of genres, the horror community with Dead Silence has been very welcoming, very welcoming, very interested, very kind, not, you know, yeah, I mean, it's just been a really good experience. I had not experienced that in that same way. I think mainly because when I was writing other things before, I was writing sort of in a very crowded market at a very peak time for YA and for, you know, that type of romance that I was writing. So I think it was kind of a combination of there is a welcoming community and what Dead Silence is a little bit different than other, you know, than a lot of other things. So I didn't, so there was a little more, it was a little easier, I guess, to be like, hey, you know, come look at my book versus, you know, when you're, I you know, the year that I was writing paranormal romance and, know, what, 5 years after Twilight came out, I was not the only one writing paranormal romance. So it was a little harder, I think, to sort of make any kind of inroad. But yeah, I have, it makes me think, you know, there's definitely a spot out there. Should I have something that I think that works for self-publishing, just because I feel like people are more, what I want to say, like, into it, more devoted to it. Like this is a genre that they care about. This is something they're very passionate about, and they call it, you know, this is who I am. And so I feel like there's less of a, you know, an obstacle in reaching them.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think they are definitely very, very hungry for that sort of thing. So as both a writer and a librarian, you know, I think that you straddle, again, you know, kind of this line between, you know, a very avid reader and a writer. What are some of the things that like are really cool about being a librarian?
Well, just to be clear, I'm not, I work in a library, but I do not have my master's degree in library science. So officially, if there's any librarian watching, just so you know, I'm not claiming false valor there. I don't want that to be the case. I do work in a library and I love it. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to pause. Is there a lot of like fighting with librarians about like...
Here's why, and I didn't really know this. I've worked in a public library and now in a school library for several years, and at the school, they're not as worried about it at all. In fact, the kids just all refer to us as the librarians. They don't know the difference, and by the time I explain it, they've tuned me out and are busy TikToking or whatever. To be an official librarian, you have to have a master's in library information and science, and it costs a good amount of money, and you generally speaking do not make enough money to really repay, like to easily repay those loans. So it is a massive commitment to do it. And so they're very inside the library organizations, the larger library, like, you know, ALA and that sort of thing. There's a very much defensiveness of, we need to protect this degree. We need this degree to be required, because otherwise nobody's going to do it. I mean, there are arguments on both sides of that, which is, you know, if you don't need it, do you really need, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm not getting into that at all, but I just always try to clarify, because I don't want a librarian to be like, you know, you don't have this. there is in fact infighting about that. And I just always like to come out. I like to be honest, so nobody comes and tries to, you know, get me on Twitter or whatever. scary. I do work in a library and I love it. And I guess one of the cool things about, especially working in a high school library, when I worked in a public library, it was really interesting, because I think the most valuable service that libraries provide now for public libraries is about access to the internet and helping those who are not internet literate. There were people who are not that much older than I am who had worked in jobs, like, say, for example, being a truck driver or whatever, and had gotten laid off and had no idea how to apply for a job because they didn't have the computer skills because they didn't need them for their day to day. So I would come in and, you know, can you help me search for a job? Can you help me, you know, apply for a job? And I feel like that gets overlooked a lot. I mean, libraries provide communities with an incredible value that people don't really recognize. On the book side, in working with a high school, I love it because they do not hesitate to tell you if something sucks, which is awesome. Including if it's your own book. They're like, yeah, it was okay. You know, but they're very passionate about it. When they find something, they will tell everybody. You get a lot of word of mouth. So if a book goes out, sometimes they'll come in, they'll be like, hi, I'm returning this, but I want my friend to read it. And the friend is there, so you check it in and then check it back out to the next person. So that is really neat to see. And I think I've had the joy a few times, not as often as I would like, of convincing a kid, just try it. I know you only read XYZ, but I think you'll like this. Please just try it. And they come back and they're like, yeah, that was really good. Can I have the next one? Or can I have something else? Because I feel like, just as sort of a philosophy, as somebody who works in a library, that there is a right book for every kid. Every kid can be a reader. You just have to find the right thing for them. So that's the stuff I love. Or when they come back and they're like, you need to try this, Miss K. And I'm like, okay. So that's what they call me. Cause my legal name is something else entirely.
I love the idea of every, you know, there's a book for every kid. I worked in a library for a summer. It was a hot summer. It was a lot of fun, but I've been around books, you know, kind of my entire life, and seeing people who maybe had not been around books their entire life, it was really eye-opening for me and kind of formative in my education, you know, both as an educator and just, you know, someone who likes to read. I currently work with a lot of kids in college who are really underprepared for college. And I think a lot of that comes from a lack of literacy. And so, I kind of wonder often about how can we as people in this community, this, you know, reading community, help build literacy both in one another and in the people who maybe aren't immediately in our reading communities.
Or who don't see it as like a strength, like it's a weakness in their own, like these kids that you and I both help and both reach out to. So they, reading and literacy is not a strength of theirs. So how could we maybe help, you know, foster that and kind of make that a strength in them? I think, is that what you're trying to?
Yeah, I think so. Is, you know, from your perspective, as, you know, a high school librarian and as someone who has worked around, you know, people who are around books, you know, what are some of the things that maybe we can do, or what are the things that you really encourage in trying to, you know, build up the literacy of the people in our lives or the people that we see?
I think Well, there's a couple things. One of the things that I love about where I work is they have a program, and I don't remember if there is a name to the program, and I think it's by Penny Kittle, I think is her name. And she had this philosophy for high schools that I love, which is basically, hey, we want to teach people, we want to teach kids how to love reading. And so it's less about reading, you know, Huckleberry Finn, or less about reading, you know, War and Peace, and more about learning to love reading, because that love will serve you better than being able to, you know, cough up bullet points about this classic book. So one of the things that they do is they have, which also helps us as a library because our circulation numbers are insane. They have 10 minutes of reading, free reading time at the front of every English period, and they can read anything they want. So graphic novels, plays, anything they want. And I think that really does make a difference, because when you aren't restricting them or forcing anybody to do anything, like I still have that problem. I don't join book clubs because I don't want somebody telling me, even if it's a great book, I don't care. I resent the fact that you are trying to tell me what I'm going to read. So as a high school student, I can't imagine. And so I love that we do that. And I think the biggest thing there's two things with literacy. I think you have to meet them where they are. In other words, if they're reading graphic novels, then give them graphic novels and kind of like, you know, get them to love different kinds of graphic novels first, and then sort of maybe inch them toward different types of storytelling. Maybe if you even need to do that, it doesn't matter. It's reading. Reading is what matters. And the other part of it, I think, is understanding that the first step, I think, in getting somebody to love books of any kind is teaching them to love story, and that story exists in multiple formats. Right. So some people have a weird hang up about audiobooks. Oh, that's not really reading. It's reading. Shut up. Just let them listen to the audiobook. It's, you know, so I try to talk to them like what I'm trying to figure out what scares me a little bit about the younger kids that I work with is when I try to say, like, what movies do you like? What TV shows? What stories? I'm trying to get at what kind of stories. And they're like, I don't. They watch like the little 2-second things on TikTok, which fine. And there are some really interesting. My sister, who's a lot younger than I am, has shown me a couple things where people were basically like doing like little mini horror movies on, on TikTok, like in those like 30-second or minute videos where it's like someone's at the door. So if we can get that idea of story in multiple formats to younger readers, I think then you have a better shot of, because then you can be like, oh, hey, remember that TikTok series you liked? Here's a book that's like that. It's a different format. But first you have to, you know, grow that love of story. You have to have that there first. In whatever format works for them, meet them where they're at, because forcing a book down their throat, the thing that kills me with kids, I love this. They come in, they're like, oh, this sounds interesting. And then they flip to the back and they want to know how many pages it is. And I have to tell you, in my whole life, I have never done that with a book, because if it's a story that's interesting to me, I don't care how many pages it is. And I keep trying to tell them, they're like, yeah, no, if this one's 150 pages, I'm going to take this one. I'm like, but you're more interested in the 300 page one. Well, yeah, but it's 300 pages. Okay. So there's some hills to conquer there, but yeah.
I'm laughing because I'm in a competition with my partner right now. We're trying to outread each other, and
That's awesome.
I don't know where this started. I don't know. You know why it started. I do know why it started, because I'm deeply egotistical and I have to beat her at everything. So, but I started this faux contest with her, and she's beating me by like 150 pages today, and I am furious about it. So I'm like constantly trying to find like, all right, what's a quick read? Something I can really rip out. I gotta catch up. Yeah.
Well, you know, my wife wasn't a huge reader, and then I got her involved in reading, and the first thing, I think one of the first books she picked up was like A Clockwork Orange by...
Whoa!
And she's like stopping all the way through it, like, what do these words mean? And I'm just like, get into the rhythm of the story, and because there's a heavy, dialect and stuff in there, and she finally got into it. Now she's doing the same thing. She's beating me. She's like, oh, what can I read next? Have you read this? And I'm like, no, I haven't read that yet. And she's like, well, I'll tell you how it is. And she's...
But again, I think it's just about finding that right, whatever that right, it makes me sad to think about, and I know this happens. I mean, heavens, there are children who grow up in houses, especially my area, is very economically and socially diverse. And there are people who don't have winter coats. There are certainly people who are growing up in houses without books. And that kills me because I think that's one of the greatest predictors of people, of kids being willing to read or enjoying reading is seeing their parents doing that. So that's so hard for me, but I feel like, you know, if we can just get everybody that one book, whatever it is, it's a different book for every person, you know, and I don't even know what that book was for me, but there is definitely, that's a mission for me when I'm working there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, are there books that really work for you? I mean, what are the things that really animate you as a reader?
I love voice. I'm a big voice person. You have to hook me with voice. I usually prefer first person. Off the top of my head, the thing that I love most recently is the Murderbot Diaries. Have you read those?
Oh, Martha Wells. Yeah, those are great.
But again, it's just the voice. I love the voice. Anything like that. If it's an interesting concept that makes me go ooh, you know, like oh, that sounds really cool. That is really what's going to get me. And I like things to move. I like action. I like, you know, I'm not a big description person. Even as a writer, I have a hard time with description. You might notice there's not a lot of description of people in my book because I'm kind of like, yeah, this way. All right, let's go. I go back at the end and add all that stuff in because I need to have it. But in my head, I'm more interested in what they're doing, what they're saying than what color their hair is, you know? So I don't like books that are going to go on for 13 pages about how the sun is shining in the sky and I don't care what is happening, what's going on. So I look for things like, so I'm a bad, like I'll pick up and read the first couple paragraphs, and if it doesn't hook me, then I'm like, I'm on to something else. I don't care if there's been a couple recently. I belong to Book of the Month Club, and it's a lot of fun, but they tend to lean a little bit more literary compared to my taste. Yep. And so sometimes everyone's like raving over this book and I read the little sample and I'm like, yeah, no, nope. Nope. Sorry.
I resonate with that a lot. I do read a lot of literary, but I also read stuff that I think is a lot more genre. For goodness sake, I'm reading every Star Wars book ever.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's real hit and miss. I mean, some of it's like truly, I'm like, I didn't even know Star Wars could get this good. And then there are some that I'm just like, I didn't know that Star Wars could get this bad.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So, but I kind of tend to mood read a lot. So, I never know quite what is going to catch me. I was up until 3 a.m. last night reading Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel.
Yeah.
Oh, it was such a wonderful book. It was so beautifully done.
That leans a little bit more like, so I tried Station 11, which everyone raves about and has won all kinds of accolades and awards, and it is beautiful. And I couldn't, like, it just didn't, and it's just a different style. The way I explain this sometimes when I'm talking about it is your gears sort of have to mesh with the author, right?
Yes.
If you don't like line up right, it doesn't work. It doesn't mean that they're bad or that you're, you know, whatever. It's just, you're not meshing.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, because everyone's so excited about that book, and I just couldn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely loved it, but I feel like I loved it a very different way than like I loved Dead Silence. I feel like Dead Silence is a very particular kind of book, and I think that those who are going to read it and resonate with it will really resonate with it, you know, because I think it hit all of the beats that I needed out of that book, you know.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. I have not shut up about this book since February. I started reading it and I was just like, everybody I could see, I was like, this book is amazing. This book kicks so much ass. And I cannot let go of it. It's just such a, it's become like my 2022 read. It's like my vibe read for the whole year, you know? Yeah.
Well, to me it was, I really wanted to, I mean, when I'm writing, I'm seeing it as a movie in my head. So I basically wanted to just try to convey that as much as possible to make it the commercial blockbuster summer movie that it is in my head, if that makes sense. It, you know what I mean?
Like, yes,
I
just absolutely
wanted to take those elements.
I think I told that to Jeremy after I finished it. I came in and I was like, this feels like a smash hit. Like, this feels like the summer movie I would go to see, and I'd be like, this was great. You know?
I have to say, with like running the like writing the scripts for podcasts and like running the publishing house and stuff, and getting, you know, I have a background as a writer, you know, like you. So it's like learning how to do all this managerial stuff for the publishing house. I'm like, I don't know how to do that, but I'm learning. So I'm not reading as fast as Trevor. So Trevor gets done with the book and I'm still reading, and he's like, oh, what page are you on? Ooh, this hasn't happened yet. And it's like, let me get to it. Just let me get there.
And I can't slow down. Like, I'm spot checking him every time I see him with a book. I'm like, yeah. Oh.
He's like, oh, have you gotten to the part yet where this happens? And I'm like, no. I'm not. Just let me get there.
Yes. Oh, because we want to talk about it. That's the way I am too. Because my sister and I often read the same things, and I'm like, oh, did you get to this? Have you read this part yet? Or where are you? No, I'm not there yet. Or she's ahead of me. And yes, I understand that, because you want to talk about it. You want to, if you're enthusiastic about it, you want to share that. And but you don't want to spoil it, because then it's not fun.
right. Yeah, I'm terrible with spoilers. I will spoil everything, and not because I wish people ill or because like I want to ruin the experience for them, but just because like
you're just so excited.
I'm way too excited.
Yeah.
Way too animated about it.
So I had a quick question that goes kind of like what you were talking about with you were influenced by different styles, different types, different genres. You know, you like to read a wide variety of books, and you also talk about like finding those students finding that particular book that can grab, like there's a book for everybody. At what point, or have you discovered this yet, where you know, the student, you've hooked them into kind of reading, now how do you get them to like branch out into the, you know, other genres and find other things? Because I know that was a big deal for like my MFA. It was, you know, we get this reading list and I'm like, well, I want to kind of focus on horror or Southern Gothic. And they're like, yeah, that's great, but let's read outside of that. So have you experienced that yet? How have you gotten kids to read outside of their?
I haven't really in that sense. What happens most often, has happened to me a couple times, is I have kids come to me who say, I normally read this and I want to try something different.
Oh, cool.
So the kids who are reluctant readers, I'm going to let them read whatever it is until they have exhausted the shelf, because I'm not going to try to, I feel like that's one of those things where you have to sort of develop that sense, you know, on your own about what, you know, when you want to try something different. They also do at the school, which I love, is they have everybody do book talks. So, you know, I'll go in and I'll talk about memoirs one day, or I'll talk about, you know, science fiction or whatever. And so sometimes the kids will come up and go, you know, not for me necessarily, but a teacher talked about this book and now I really want to try it, even though it's outside of my. So I think making them aware of other stories is good. And if you can do personal testimony, that helps. But I also feel like I said, for reluctant readers, you just you let them do their thing, because if they're reading, that's all I care about. And then the kids who are, a girl came up to me, she said, I normally read romance, but I want to try something in horror. I'm like, okay. So my first thought with then is, I want to find you something that still focuses on relationships and still has the emotional aspect to it, because I don't want it to be, I'm not going to dump you off in something that is completely not at all related, because like I said earlier, I feel like every story has a little bit of every genre in it. So I want to try to find something that is not a hard transition, because then I feel like if you can open that door, then they might be willing to go back another time. So to me, it's kind of finding that transition book that works for them based on their previous interests.
So I'm hoping, I guess, that more cross like genre blending and books and literature will help people kind of branch out and discover. So like if they like, say, the romance, but there's a lot of genre blending with like romance and horror, romance and sci-fi, maybe they'll act like a gateway to get them into other types of stories.
Well, it's so interesting to me, because coming up from YA, you know, obviously you have to pick a genre, because they've got to put you in a genre for the bookstore or for the library or whatever. But I really feel like YA sort of opened this, created a generation of writers, including myself, who were accustomed to being able to push genres together. Every book I have written has been multiple, with the exception, I think, of the romance, has been multiple genres stuffed together. Mm. So I wrote paranormal romantic comedy, and I wrote science fiction that has a heavy romance angle, both in YA, and nobody blinked. They didn't hesitate. Mm-hmm. It was not a big deal. Now, if I tried to do that for adults, that's where it gets a little, like, people are kind of like, you know, your peanut butter isn't my chocolate, your chocolate isn't my peanut butter sort of thing. And I, you know, I'm hoping, I think part of, there's a couple things. I think the more of us who are doing it, the more it's going to be like, oh, I liked this one, so maybe I'll try this other thing, you know? So the more writers you have that are kind of coming up from that history, I think that that will help. And I think the more that those books, I mean, let's face it, publishing, you guys know, is about sales. Yeah. So the more those books sell, the better, more people are going to be like, oh, you want to write Amish vampire romance? Okay, let's do that. You know, like they...
You're blowing my mind right now.
I make stuff up off the top of my head, you know.
I love like, it. Whatever. Amish vampire romance. I want to read that now. I want to...
Let's
group write that. We're gonna co-author that together. I think that'll be fun.
In my head already, I'm thinking, well, it's not really that much of a leap because you'd have somebody who would know what life was like, you know, in the 1800s, so then to live in an Amish community wouldn't really be.
Okay. I actually know some Mennonites, so we're real close.
You could totally do that.
Your point too, I mean, it's not just the writers coming up, but then the readers as they graduate from like young adult and they're used to that genre blending, hopefully they help change the discourse in adult literature too.
I would love that. I mean, I think one of the things, and this is me speaking from a personal perspective, so I'm not casting stones or anything, but one of the things that I love about YA literature or YA books when I was writing them, and now that that group of readers has grown up, is I feel like they have taken their love of what I'm going to, like, you know, character-driven stories, personal, you know, so it's not about as much about like saving the world as it is about this specific person saving the world. It's about whatever interpersonal communications or clarifications or conflict is going on within them, as well as this other plot. And I love that. And I hope that, I mean, almost everybody that I debuted with in 2010 has moved on to writing other things because it's YA has changed dramatically, as it should, as it continues to grow.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that we have taken the lessons that we sort of learned coming up that way and are applying them to the genres that we're writing currently.
Yeah.
And obviously we hope that Dead Silence is just a smash hit, right? That people learn, from experience.
So far, so good. They're very pleased. They're very pleased with the numbers, and I think there will be more science fiction horror in my future. So,
I cannot wait.
I'm very. But see, okay, you know, the funny thing is about being a writer is then, you know, everyone, it's so funny. We're so neurotic because if nobody likes it, you're like, oh, nobody likes it. I suck. I should never write again. If people like it, they're like, yay, they like it. Oh my God, what if I can't do it again? There's no in between. If you're doing well, you're like, ah. If you're not doing well, you're like, ah.
You know, at this point in time, I think I can safely say, I'm a buy it, you know.
Like, yeah.
I'm ready for it. I'm so ready for it. So
thank you, I appreciate that.
And of course, anytime you want to celebrate like any kind of releases or any kind of information, let us know. We'll help spread that and share that information.
I will definitely do that. I should have some information. I not yet.
I totally get it.
I was gonna ask if you know the next question as we kind of start wrapping up is, you know, are there any projects, you know, kind of on the horizon that you wanted to share or talk about?
I am working on, as I mentioned, a sci-fi horror. It's set on a planet. I'm having fun with it. It's also driving me crazy, as the best books do, I guess. And that one will be my next one, and that's about all I can say about that. But I also have a couple other ideas that I'm really excited about that I have not started. One of the things is my sister worked as an editor for Hachette, for Orbit, for a while, and she's now running her own thing. And I texted her, I'm like, has there ever been a book that discusses what we do with the dead when we live in space? Like, if we're all on ships and we're all on like space stations, you know, do we just disintegrate people? Do we send them out into space like they did on with Spock? You know, what happens?
I don't know, but like, I am ready for that story.
Right? And I'm like, huh. And then, you know, are we far enough in the future that we're willing enough to be like, you know, no one cares about being buried anymore. Everyone's just cremated. Like, is everyone willing to like get to that point? Or if they're not, how do we handle this? Like, what do we do? What does this look like? So I'm very intrigued by this. And that's one of the things I'm kind of playing around with. And then I also have, that's not the sci-fi horror one. I mean, it is, but it's not the one I'm currently working on. Farther down the line. And then, I have one, the one that I was talking about earlier about being more kind of a straight up traditional horror, which is basically about how middle school girls are the devil. And
that's a callback to like, I'm ready for that too. Some 70s horror there.
Just, you know, the decisions that you make when you're 12, 13, 14 and how they can kind of haunt you for the rest of your life, literally and figuratively. So I have a bunch of things that I'm really, really excited. The problem is, again, I'm a slow writer, so I'm like doing the best that I can, but I'm like, oh, and I want to get this, and I want to do that, and then I want to do that. And it's like, okay, by the time I'm finally finished, Amish vampire romance is going to be what everybody wants, and I'm not going to have anything. So I'm doing the best I can.
I love that. I love that so much. Where can people find you online?
I am most often on Instagram. I think at author Stacey Cade, but I have a website, which is stacycade.com, StaceyKade.com, mainly because if I have two of everything, nothing will ever get updated. So everything's kind of pushed under one. And I do visit Twitter, but I don't interact much there because, like I said, Twitter is scary. So, and at Twitter, I think I'm just at Stacey Cade.
Yeah. Okay. Twitter is scary.
Twitter is scary.
Yeah.
Not as scary as Facebook. Facebook terrifies me.
I keep to my own corner of Facebook and everybody pretty much leaves me alone. I am on there, but I don't, no one really goes there anymore.
Right.
About politics. So I just sort of stay clear of that.
Icky.
Someone once told me that Twitter has a main character every day and you do not want to be the main character. And I have taken that advice to heart. So I just stay away from Twitter.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of our show today. It was so wonderful to have you here and to have a talk with you about your book. If you want to find Dead Silence, it's out on bookshelves everywhere.
Yep, everywhere.
Second printing now, so there was some trouble finding it, but now there's a second printing that should be coming out any time now. So
oh my gosh,
that's good news.
That's even more exciting.
And we are going to, just a reminder that Slay House is going to be there at Stoker Con in a couple of weeks. Are you going to be there? Are you?
I am not. Unfortunately, the school year is not over by that point.
Oh,
so
true.
I'm still otherwise occupied, but I believe Alma is going to be there. So
yes,
she will. Mentioned that to me and I was hoping that I'd get to go, but maybe next year.
Hopefully.
You know what? Whenever you come, we will be excited about it.
We will. Yes. We'll bring our books. We will have books for you to sign. So.
Okay. Well, that would be awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
I think that's the episode.
Awesome. Thank you.